I am so very glad to be here with you today to share a sermon on our gospel passage of Luke chapter 12. I'm also so very glad for the friendship that I share with Amanda and Ryan and Jeremy and their families through denomination ties, especially as a newcomer to your province of Alberta after moving here earlier this year, and please don't boo me, after I married a Calgarian. I'm starting to catch on to these ties. I've spent 15 years in church ministry at a few different places, and the last 7 of those have been here in the CBWC. I'm looking forward to new things in Calgary in church ministry in the fall. I titled this sermon, Death, Stuff, and Money, as a riff on the title of one of my favorite podcasts, Death, Sex, and Money. Is anyone a listener? It's nothing shady to put your hand up to, I promise. It's a public radio program out of WNYC, hosted by a woman named Anna Sale. She states at the beginning of each podcast, the show, about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. To me, the podcast models the act of giving expression to the parts of the human experience that hold a great deal of power in our lives. For example, here are a few of the episode podcast titles. How Jeff Daniels Got Sober Again. Thank you. Dead people don't have any secrets, which is in fact about the secrets in sickness and in mental health. Anna Sale speaks to celebrities and non-celebrities about the stuff that matters the most. In the gospel story of Luke 12, where we find this parable of the rich fool, Jesus hears a request from the crowd when a man says, "Hey, Rabbi, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." This type of question, by the way, was perfectly normal. It's a perfectly normal thing to ask a first century rabbi. And instead of jumping in as a mediator, Jesus does this really interesting thing. He rearranges the request to reveal, in fact, what really matters. Jesus states a warning: be on guard against greed. Then Jesus tells a story. Look at the life of this rich fool. And then Jesus makes a point: be rich toward God. While this sermon will most definitely explore the themes of money and mortality, it's my hope that we will dig a little deeper and even get to the heart of what really matters the most: being a disciple, being a follower of God. In other words, desiring God in all the things that God has for us. To begin our examination of this text, I've given this section a bit of a death, sex, and money-like episode title, and it is this: How Getting Everything You Dream Of Can Be a Total Nightmare. So let's jump right into that story that Jesus was telling, which we'll see turns out to be quite the character study of this rich man in the parable. In the first 2 verses, we find a man who is filled with self-focus. In verse 16 to 17, this man maps out the world as if God does not exist. He takes full credit of the abundance and the fertility of the land and trips over himself with so many personal pronouns. What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. This would have stood out to the religious amongst the crowd. The norm of Jewish farmers in the first century was to turn to God as the one who blessed and ensured an abundant harvest. Not our guy, though. Not this rich fool. In verse 18 and 19, we find a man who is fixated on his cushy comfort. Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my old barns and build much bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus of grain. And I will say to myself," and this is kind of interesting, "myself, my soul, you have plenty of grain laid up for years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry." But I mean, from where we sit, in a comfortable, very peaceful corner of the world, it's easy to wonder what's so wrong with this. Shouldn't a person work hard and reap the rewards later in life? In fact, I think that's very much our Canadian way. And sure, there's nothing wrong with that. Not exactly. This story is about so much more than those filled up barns and all that money. This story highlights just one of many distractions in being a follower of Christ. These distractions come in the form of temporary tastes. Verse 20 highlights the temporary nature of the rich fool's life focus. God said, "You fool. You person lacking so much perspective. You short-sighted decision maker. This very night, your life will be demanded of you. Then who will get all that you've hoarded for yourself?" This man, this rich fool, he is an anti-disciple. In living a life of greed and covetousness, he has reversed the created order. In serving his wealth, he has damaged relationships. Did you notice there's no one around him? And he has been left to face his death, ironically, empty-handed. What's missing? It seems to me the bigger picture. It should stretch out far past his personal comfort and enjoyment, and it should meet up with the needs of others. So, his possessions, or even his prudence, those things aren't the problem, but the self-focus, the pursuit of cushy comfort and temporary taste at the expense of the stewardship and social responsibility that is before him, those things are the problem. They are very much the problem. And I think we get this, right? We live in a time when wage inequality and the growing gap between the uber wealthy and the extremely poor seems to be ripping at the very fabric of our existence. But still, we are more familiar with stories of avarice, of extreme greed and extreme wealth, than we are of stories of generosity. Our idols are owners of multinational brands and conglomerates. Why, for example, did I spend any time in my precious life digging around online last week to find out what the beef was between Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian? I mean, really, right? Swift, who made $170 million in the last 12 months. Kardashian, who made $51 million in the last 12 months. Further, Forbes magazine reported that the world's 100 highest paid celebrities pulled in $5.1 billion pre-tax over the past 12 months, more than the GDP of Belize, Gambia, and Bhutan combined. So, let us hear the words of Hosea the prophet. They sacrificed to those false gods, and they burnt incense to images. It was I, the Lord, who taught Ephraim to walk, taking them by the arms, but they did not realize it was I who healed them. So what are we supposed to do in this world of ours, so full of false images, so cushy with comfort, so hung up on all those temporary tastes? This world of ours that throws up so many distractions, taking us away from the beauty of the one who takes us by the arms and heals us. My friend Luann is one of those people that's extremely bothered by poverty in the world. And it's Luann who introduced me to the organization Kiva, a nonprofit microfinance company. And I'll let the words that she wrote on a blog post in 2011 tell you a little bit about that. She wrote this: "Like most of you, poverty bothers me. It is also one of those overwhelming problems that can seem so massive that it can paralyze us. She says, I discovered Kiva in October 2006 while surfing the internet one day, much better than my search of what was going on between Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian. She said, I was intrigued by the idea of an organization who simply wanted to do something about poverty by helping regular, everyday people in developed countries lend small amounts of money online to entrepreneurs in the developing world. She did her research, and it all checked out for her, so she dove in. Later in the post, Luann wrote this, microfinance may not be the solution to addressing the world's poverty, but it is something. So being that that post was from 2011, I decided to check in with my good friend Luann in a Facebook message this week and get a bit of an update. And the cool thing is she kind of rolled the clock back a bit for me, and she told me a little bit more about where this all came from for her. She said, and I think you'll really identify with her words here. She said, I grew up with really great role models when it came to giving out of the abundance of the financial blessings God gave to us. Mostly this was practiced through supporting the local church and also supporting missionaries and other charitable causes. But she said in her late 20s, she heard this sermon by what she called a meek accountant, and he encouraged those hearers to remember that it isn't just our 10% that Jesus is Lord of, but in fact, all of it. He's Lord of even the 90%. So she began to think, so long ago, what am I supposed to do with my money now? And then she reported this data. She said, after 400 loans in 54 countries, that she doesn't have to fear any market crash because now she's made all these new neighbors. And I'm not talking about a wealthy friend here. You see, of course, again, it's not really about the money, is it? It's about all the stuff that matters most to us. I mean, wouldn't it have been more appropriate to hear Jesus tell the story of the rich fool to the brother who actually had all the money? Not the one trying just to get a piece of it? Let's go back to the text and see where Jesus was going with all of this. So I'm calling this section a bit of a podcast title-like section. Just when you thought this was about something you could measure. After the rich man's life is demanded from him in the night, his shiny new barns full of all that fruit of the land get left behind. So, and I love this kind of image. It's like Jesus kind of puts a foot in this theme of money, and Jesus puts a foot in this theme of mortality, and then he gets to the heart of the matter. Finishing with these words in verse 21. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God. But really, what does that even mean, to be rich toward God? Or as Peterson says in the message, to fill up barns full of God and not of self. Robert Farrar Capon says it like this, we clutch to our lives rather than open our hands to our deaths. And as long as we do that, the real life that comes only by the resurrection remains permanently out of reach. And I do love that quote, but I still want to locate Jesus's invitation even a little closer to home. St. Ambrose wrote that Jesus was reminding his disciples that the things we cannot take away with us are not even ours. Only virtue is the companion of the dead. Compassion alone follows us. So in traveling around the country, in gathering up these crowds into his arms, Jesus invites people to do the same. We fill up our lives with God by caring about more than just our own lives, way more than the 10% we give, even way more than the 90. In responding to the distress of the community, we live our lives as gifts that they are meant to be. So I think we could use just one more character study to bring this into focus. This finally brings us to that goofy-looking picture on the front of your bulletin. Go ahead, grab it. Yes, in fact, it is Julianne of Norwich. No, those heart-shaped glasses did not accompany her from the 15th century. This summer, I've been spending some quality time with Our Lady Julian because I've been doing some camp speaking at Gull Lake. And my theme was ordinary people that God used in extraordinary ways. So I took a handful of saints, artists, and even some legends with me and introduced them to the kids at camp. To bring these figures to life, I added symbols to those pictures, familiar to the kids, I'd hoped, from various social media apps and photo apps on phones and computers. In my rereading of Julian's Revelations of Divine Love this summer, I found a person who knew exactly what it meant to be rich toward God. And I want to end with reading a section of her own words for you. But before I do that, I want to talk about the symbols that I added to her picture just to bring her story to life for us a bit. So first, you'll notice those heart-shaped glasses on her face. And those are certainly the antithesis of the rich fool's self-focus. For you see, Julian saw the world through the lenses of God's love. In the visions that God gave to her while she was sick at around the age of 30, she saw God's love in everything. The next symbol is a little bit trickier to find. There's a skeleton hand in her arm, the arm of her dress there. So I'm sure you've located it now. And I chose that symbol to represent bare-boned simplicity. This is the antithesis of the rich fool's cushy comfort. Because we know we live in a world with incredible stuff in it, but Julian, she did not care about stuff. She eventually lived her life as an anchorite in a little church cell off a church to achieve spiritual perfection. The final symbol is the one of the pen that you'll notice by her hand. In color, it's pink. And that pen represents her legacy, which was very much about other people. And this is the antithesis of the temporary tastes of the rich fool. Julian, if that even is her name, we don't know for certain, she spent the remaining years of her life perfecting the writings of her showings, her revelations, so that she could encourage the spiritual perfection of others. And she wrote these words about that. Stop paying attention to the poor being to whom this vision was shown, and eagerly, attentively, and humbly contemplate God. So I want to leave in closing with you a chunk of her own text. And I encourage you to listen for this different character study and compare it to the character of the rich fool, remembering that it is Jesus who receives all of our requests and then basically, well, he shatters them. He replaces our requests and our longings with all that really matters, the love of God and the virtue of sharing God's love with our global community. So these are some of her words from what is called the long text. Don't worry, I've chopped it down a bit for you. From Revelations of Divine Love, Revelation number 6. And I mean, as it is when words come at us, just listen for one thing, maybe one or two things that stand out to you as we close today. So she wrote, "Therefore, it pleases God that we should seek and worship him in this intermediate ways, while understanding and knowing that he is the goodness of all. For the goodness of God is the highest object of prayer, and it reaches down to our lowest need. For he does not despise what he has made, nor does he disdain to serve us in the simplest task that belongs by nature to our bodies. Through love of the soul which he has made in his own likeness, for as the body is clad in cloth, and the flesh in skin, and the bones in the flesh, and the heart in the chest, so we are, soul and body, clad in the goodness of God and enclosed in it. Yes, and more inwardly, because all these may waste and wear away, but God's goodness is always strong and incomparably near us. For truly our loving God wants our souls to cling to him with all our might and wants us to cling to his goodness forever. And therefore, with his grace and his help, we stand and gaze at him in the Spirit with unending amazement at this high, surpassing, inestimable love that Almighty God has for us in his goodness. And therefore, we may reverently ask our loving friend whatever we wish, for our natural wish is to have God, and God's good wish is to have us. And we can never stop wishing or longing until we fully and joyfully possess him. And then we shall wish for nothing more, for he wants us to be absorbed in knowing and loving him until the time when we reach fulfillment in heaven. Friends at First Baptist Church, may you seek this God of all goodness. May the compassion of Christ move you towards the needs of your community and make you even more generous. And may the Spirit quicken your soul and give you life. Amen.